Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Protein's Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And this is episode 105. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. We are in full swing winter here in New England as it is dumping snow on us at the moment. But I kind of like it because it's been weird that we haven't had any snow pretty much all winter.
Why don't you come out and shovel with me?
No, I'm good. I'm good with that. That's probably why I like it, because I haven't shoveled anything yet.
Why don't you come out and snowboard with me?
Maybe. I'm just not good at it, and it's, like, expensive, so it seems like this big waste of money for me to just, like, suck at something and then slow you down all day. I don't know.
A lot of driving. Mind. Well, we have the Bunny Hill right here, about a mile and a half away. I'm hoping to...
That's about my speed.
And maybe Daisy will get out. I asked her on her birthday, my niece. I'm like, hey, girl, like, what do you want to do? Like, what's your birthday wish? And she's like, I want to go ice skating and snowboarding. We went ice skating. That was a lot of fun. For the first time, I was actually truly proud of her. Truly proud. Like,
don't know how to feel about that sentence, but okay.
Well, there's like... pride, and you instill that in your niece, and then there's like blown away, you blew my mind, I cannot believe you just learned how to ice skate inside of 15 minutes. How did you do that? She's very determined.
Yeah, she sure is. When she wants to do something. Last night we were playing hide and seek, and like she would count, and then she'd be like, do you know where Desmond is? And I'm like, Daisy, that's not the game. You have to go look for him. You have to go find him. And she like walks in a circle. She's like, I can't find him. I'm like, you didn't even look. So she's got to be like real interested. But then she's determined. But we also just got back from Los Angeles like a week ago. We were out there for the LA Fit Expo, which was awesome. But it was rainy the whole time. And it was kind of funny to me, because everybody there was complaining so much about the rain. And apparently parts of California got rain, like, that was very destructive, blah, blah, blah. But people in Los Angeles were complaining about the rain. And I was like, guys, this is drizzling.
I don't even understand half of how the West Coast operates, even though we lived there for around 5 years. I'm a New Englander, Northeast, through and through. Can't take it out of me.
A couple of our friends who live there were like, oh, yeah, people might not come out for the Fit Expo because of the rain. I was like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean they might not come out because of the rain? Because it literally, at worst, it was like a normal rain. But most of the time it was just drizzling. And we had to walk a lot of places because we didn't all fit in the car. And at one point there was like water running down the side of the road. And Robert was like, look, that's the flooding. And I was like, excuse me? That's the flooding? That's like the water running down the side of the street that doesn't even form a puddle is the flooding? Wow. So strange to me.
Whatever. I'm super curious for our next trip because you and I have never been to the Arnold Classic, correct?
No, which is so crazy because of how many times we've been to all of the different fitness expos and the Olympia. It's just for whatever reason, every year when we were supposed to go to the Arnold, something happened and we couldn't go to the Arnold. Like we were in a wedding or we were on the cruise and then COVID shut everything down. Like as we were about to board the plane to the Arnold, like we've just never been.
So any of y'all out there in the Midwest or planning on traveling to Columbus, Ohio for the Arnold Classic, we will be out there representing with Vegan Strong.
Yeah, come out, say hi. Apparently it's madness. I don't know. I've never been, but pretty excited. Basically, we found out that we will be traveling plenty this year. So don't have the total schedule yet, but we know we are going to the Arnold. So we'll see you guys there.
Anyways, what are we getting into today, Danny?
Today, we are going to be talking about how little lifting can you do to still make progress. So, sort of lifting minimalism. You know, a lot of times we think about how to get 100% of possible progress, leave no stone unturned, leave no gains on the table, and that requires a lot, right? It requires a lot of time in the gym. It requires a lot of exercise variety, and it takes up a big chunk of your life. And I think this turns some people off because their life just can't, their life is not cut out to be at the gym 2 hours, 5 days a week. So then the question is not just, okay, well, how much can you commit to do? But really, I think the question is, how much do you actually need to do to get maybe not 100% of the results, but like most of the results? Because the more I dug into this, the more I was really surprised by the answers.
Well, the first question you have to ask is, how long have you been training? And if the answer is under 3 years, then you don't have to worry about this too much, because honestly, the muscle will come on real fast without much effort at all, as long as you're training at least twice a week. But the research does show that the sweet spot is 3 times a week for most, even those who are very advanced in their lifting career, meaning how many years you've been training consecutively.
Interesting. That's not... See, when Giacomo and I come up with these topics, we come up with the topics and then we just go do our own separate research. So I'm always very interested to see what Giacomo comes to the table with versus what I come to the table with, because what I found for maximum gains, so the opposite of what we're talking about today, for maximum gains, you need to do 10 to 20 sets per body part per week, which is pretty standard. Now, 10 to 20 sets, that's a big variance, right? So let's just talk about the lower end of that. Let's say 10 sets per body part per week for maximum possible gains on average. That's not a lot. That's really not a lot when you think about it, right?
Depends on how you break it up. I'm thinking like how many hours worth of training a week would that require in order to get in that amount of volume. Can you get that in 3 days?
I could get it in two. I'm sure I could get it in two. 5 sets per body part twice a week, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that could be 5 sets of squats, 5 sets of pull-ups, 5 sets of bench press, 5 sets of overhead press, 5 sets of rows twice a week. Like, that's pretty, I mean, that would be a longish workout, and it would be pretty challenging workout because those are all big compound movements, but that's it. But still, that might be more than somebody can do. And that's, again, that's talking about getting maximum gains. So what can you do that's less than that? Like if what I just said, it gives you 100%, does doing half of that give you 50%? Does doing, you know, 7 sets give you 70%? No. The research is pretty clear that that's not actually how it works. So first, let's back up. People lift weights for a lot of different reasons. So we need to determine what the goal is here. If the goal is strength, like if you're just lifting for strength, the data shows that one heavy set, 1 to 3 times per week, is enough to make strength gains. One set. You could do one heavy ass, and it has to be heavy, like in the 1 to 5 rep range, and you need to be pushing pretty close to failure. 1 set of squats per week is enough to get you strength gains. Think about that.
And it's also a lot more rewarding when you're lifting for strength because the results are very tangible. You know exactly what you're getting. You're either putting more weight in the bar with a proper range of motion or you're not. Whereas when it comes to physique gains, the waters get a little muddied up no matter how data heavy your research is. You can be less wrong over time. However, things can get a bit skewed when it comes to how much muscle are you putting on and where are you putting on when you're a physique minded athlete. So this is where it gets interesting to me. Because when I think of gains for body composition goals, I think of what someone wants to look like. And it's like, okay, so you've gained as much muscle as you can for where your body has meant to gain muscles in, say, your shoulders, and now it's going to get extremely hard. But have you put on muscle in an area where your body is more likely to put on muscle, like your arms, and you haven't worked that area hard enough? So there's a lot more to it than how much muscle can you gain in as little amount of time spent in the gym training as possible. There's just so many layers here that I like to think about, right? And I don't want to confuse you in conversation or you, the listener, which...
He knows me.
I know. But I'm pretty excited about all the different... I mean, this is where I like to geek out when it comes to physique more so than strength. So I got a lot to say, but I'm curious to know where your head's at.
Well, I'm very confused by everything that you just said. I don't understand what you're trying to say here.
Okay. Here's my thought. When you're lifting and you want your body to look a certain way, mm-hmm. right? You're learning what your body's capable of doing. Everybody has different body parts that are going to grow faster and going to grow slower. You're also learning how to use your body and train more efficiently over time to gain muscle, right? So as you continue to lift, you're going to learn how to improve your lifting rather than lifting more often, meaning what areas can you continue to grow muscle? How can you shape your body? These are the things I think about, as opposed to I'm just going to spend more time lifting, or I'm not spending enough time lifting.
Okay. So I think I kind of understand what you're saying. Let me back up a little bit. The reason that this topic is so interesting to me is because I actually think it's very encouraging. This is very encouraging data, because a lot of times people feel like if they can't do everything, then why bother? They should just do nothing. Or they think that if they only have 20 or 30 minutes to work out, that's not enough time, so they're just not going to do it. But when we actually dig into the research, you can get a tremendous amount of progress with way less than even I thought. It's less than I thought. It's surprisingly less than I thought. And this isn't me saying, hey, everybody, just like succumb and be lazy and just do the bare minimum because that's really all you need to do. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we all go through patches where something else is requiring more of our attention. It's taking up more of our time, whether that's your job or kids or you're traveling or whatever. And a lot of times I know for myself, I can get really down on myself because I'm not in the gym 5 days a week lifting for almost 2 hours like we used to do in 2015. Now, yeah, my results were probably a little bit better doing that. However, knowing what I have been capable of doing, which is about 3 to 4 times a week. Now I'm lifting hard, I'm lifting heavy while I'm there. I'm really pushing, but it's not the same as it used to be. And one, I've still built muscle, even past 2015. I've certainly maintained muscle in various areas. The muscle looks different at this point just because I've had it for longer, so it looks denser and harder than it used to. And looking at the research now, it's like, man, you can actually get away with even less than that. And knowing what you can quote unquote get away with and still move forward, to me, that's not like admitting defeat. That's just smart. That's just playing it smart to make sure that no matter what is going on in your life, you can still move forward. And also, let's not forget, like, I love lifting, you love lifting. Lots of people don't. They don't love lifting, even though they know it's good for them. Even though they know it can benefit their health and help them live like more vivaciously into old age, they just don't enjoy it. And the thought of having to pour 4, 5, 6 days a week into the gym for like an hour, they're not going to do it. But if they knew that they could do one heavy set per body part per week and make 81% of possible strength gains that way, that is a lot more encouraging.
Yeah, as long as you still do the thing. And all of the time that you have invested in learning how to lift, all of the time that you have invested in learning how to make sure that you can't not exercise because you've incorporated it into your lifestyle, all of the time that you have spent building a foundation for managing your stress, all of that adds up. And it makes it so that you are a better lifter and a more efficient lifter, and you're still able to train. And all of that stuff makes it so that you're able to still put on muscle. It's as simple as that.
I haven't even gotten to the muscle part yet.
Let's hear it.
I was just talking about strength.
Okay.
So strength, one heavy set. In one research study, like I said, 1 to 4 sets of heavy loads, taken almost to failure, got 81% of the potential strength gains. Now, this is on average, right? Everybody's different. Your mileage may vary, but still, this is what the data suggests. When it comes to health benefits, so improving blood pressure, cholesterol, cardiovascular, basically 30 to 60 minutes of lifting per week gave you your max health benefits, regardless of how it was broken up. 30 minutes. 30 minutes max health benefits per week. Holy crap.
Hey, listeners. We hope you've been enjoying this episode, and we appreciate your love of all things vegan fitness. For those of you who want even more support on your vegan fitness journey, check out our Muscles by Brussels community and become a member. By joining the team, you are one of our exclusive VIPs. As a member, you'll find over 200 macro-friendly, high-protein recipes that can meet any of your meal planning needs. You'll also receive training programs that update monthly. This training has progressive overload built into it, so you can be sure if you're following the program, you are making progress. All of this and more is located inside our Vegan Proteins members-only app. As a Muscles by Brussels member, you'll unlock bonus courses, challenges, and more every month. You'll also be invited to our live Zoom video calls, which happen 2 times a month, and are absolute gold to those who show up. And if you can't make the calls, don't worry. You have the opportunity to email us whenever you want. You'll receive a video response to all of your questions from one of the coaches here at Vegan Proteins every time you message us. Members also receive 40% off many of our other services. And of course, our private community of like-minded individuals is like no other. Best of all, you can try this membership out for a full month at no cost to you with this special offer for our listeners only, because we appreciate and want to fully support you. Use the link in our show notes to sign up for your free trial today. We hope to see you on our next live coaching call.
Now let's talk about muscle, building muscle, because that is a little bit more complicated than strength and health, because it does come down to volume and increasing that volume over time. So volume just being the amount of weight that you lift in a workout in total.
Wait, so increasing the amount of volume over time or accumulating more volume over time? Can you accumulate more volume over time and still put muscle on?
I don't know what that means.
Meaning?
You can't accumulate less volume.
Well, let's say that you, for argument's sake, lifted 100,000 pounds worth of weight last year. And this year, you lifted another 100,000 pounds of weight. Are you putting on more muscle?
Yeah, probably. So, okay.
And it's an important distinction to make, because people think that they have to get progressively stronger versus accumulating more volume over time. And I think it's a combination of the two. And sometimes you can continue to lift.
Well, there's a lot of different ways to increase volume that aren't just putting weight on the bar.
There you go.
So
yeah,
just getting better at a lift.
Yes.
You're increasing your volume. It's just harder to quantify than the number on the dumbbell. But okay, so back to what I said at the beginning. 10 sets per body part per week equals potential maximum gains. Okay? So you would think that, okay, if 10 sets equals 100% of gains, then 5 sets probably equals 50% of gains, right? No. What they saw was when they studied groups of people, 1 to 4 sets per body part per week got 64% of hypertrophy, possible hypertrophy gains. 1 to 4 sets got 64%. That is 64% higher than 0. And 5 to 9 sets was 84% of possible hypertrophy gains. So actually putting muscle on, gaining muscle. You could do as little as 4 sets per body part per week. And as long as you are pushing it, like these can't be wimpy little sets. They have to be hard ass sets, but you can get 64% of the possible gains on the table. Isn't that like mind-blowingly awesome?
It makes it so that your baseline is a place where you will always be putting on more muscle, or your muscles and or your muscles will continue to get stronger no matter where you're at in life.
Yeah.
It's motivating is what it is, right?
It's so motivating. To me, and I know I've talked about this on the YouTube channel, I've talked about it in my Instagram stories, I've probably talked about it on the podcast, like my life's, the way that I divvy up my time in my day-to-day life has changed so much in the last couple of years since the kids have been born and now since we have them. Like, it is just not what it used to be. And that can be kind of depressing sometimes when you have goals that you want to follow, but you know how much time it's going to take to do it and you just don't have that time. Sometimes it's just easier to be like, well, guess I'll kiss that dream goodbye then because I have to do other things. And I think knowing what you can do and still move forward and how little time that necessarily requires is like, I don't know, to me, that's like quite a little beacon of light personally. And something that I've kind of witnessed to be true in some ways, like I just mentioned, to maintain someone's muscle. We're talking about growing muscle, right? What if somebody's just kind of happy with where they're at and they just want to maintain it? How much work do you need to do that? Well, one study showed that people did, for 8 months, people maintained their muscle mass doing 1/9 of the work that they were doing before. So that's 11%. 11% of what they were doing before was enough to maintain their muscle mass. Now, this I've for certain witnessed. There were periods where I might have squeaked out 3 or 4 workouts in an entire month the first time we had the kids in 2019. And when I came back, I mean, I didn't go get a DEXA and see if it was exactly the same, but it appeared to me that I hadn't lost any muscle mass. I hadn't maybe lost some strength for a minute, but it came back very quickly. I don't know. I think it's really very exciting.
My head's all over the place because I look at a situation like that and I immediately move toward regret in that, well, okay, there's a loss of the opportunity for progressive overload, meaning your gains compounding over time. Not necessarily true based on the data that you're sharing with our audience today. You're continuing to put on muscle and you're keeping the muscle that you earned, like over the course of a lifetime. It doesn't change your feelings, and your feelings can definitely put you in a place where you may even self-destruct and start lifting less or just lift without the same enthusiasm. And hey, knowing that that is not the case, like you can still train and you still haven't lost your chance for progressive overload, like, again, pretty encouraging stuff, Danny.
Yeah. There are some caveats that I kind of mentioned here. These cannot be wimpy workouts. If you're going to try this, you can't just show up and half-ass your way through the workout. Like, anything from, like, with compound movements, you know, maybe 5 to 12 reps, depending, and, you know, maybe 8 to 12 reps on some supplemental or isolation movements. But you need to be taking those sets pretty much to failure. If you're going to do one set of something per workout, you got to take it to at least mechanical failure, like where you're... your form is breaking. You can't perform it with good form anymore. You can also do things like add drop sets if you wanted to. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of just throwing drop sets in everywhere. So drop set is where you do, let's say you do a shoulder press with 25-pound dumbbells and you get 12 reps. And then you immediately cut the weight of the dumbbell in half, do 12.5-pound dumbbells. You don't rest at all, and you just keep going with the 12.5s until failure. That would be a drop set. I don't recommend doing this frequently because I feel like it's just really taxing, and it takes a lot to recover from. But we're not talking about doing this in a 5-day-a-week plan. We're talking about doing this in a 2- or 3-day-a-week plan where you're doing, like, you know, 6 to 8 sets for the entire workout. You can throw a drop set in here and there. You're going to be okay. Because the name of the game, if you are going to, you cannot have it both ways. You can't do very little volume and put very little intensity in. If it's going to be very little volume, you need to be beast moding those few sets that you're doing.
What I start to think about when you discuss all the extra time that you can have schedule-wise, freeing up that time, it reminds me of the argument that I have with my clients and with training philosophy in general with whomever wants to discuss with me. It's like, even if you had all that time to train, have you covered all of your bases in every other arena of your life to make it so that you're getting the most out of the time that you do spend training?
Oh, ooh la la. That is our next podcast. Time wasters that are sucking the life out of your gains. So don't you start in on that now. We'll get there. Next podcast for sure. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have like a ton to say on this topic. Like, I don't know if I could talk about this for 45 minutes. I just think that it is so awesome. Like, this research to me was like a breath of fresh air and did in many ways reflect my own personal experiences. But I, you know, this whole time I just kept thinking like, oh, guess I just got lucky, you know, but it turns out that they've studied this and, you know, maybe my experience was more standard. Again, other people's mileage may vary here. You might require more. And the more experienced you are, you might need to continue to kick it up a little bit. But the takeaway here is don't do nothing. Even if you think you can't do everything when it comes to lifting, don't do nothing, because there's tremendous benefits to even doing one heavy set per week. Like, you could literally walk into another room, grab a set of dumbbells, and do a set of overhead presses to failure. It would take you under 60 seconds, and you just did it. Like, why wouldn't you if that's the case? You know? And life comes for us all at one point or another, and it's like, ha ha ha, you thought you had things set up this way? Lol. And then everything gets really, really hard. And what are you going to do when that happens? So many people just get frustrated and quit. And you don't have to do that.
Worse, they keep doing it and they lose all sense of enjoyment in what they're doing because they think that they're wasting their time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be that person. As long as you're continuing to lift, even if it's not the same frequency or this or that, you can find ways to continue to improve while lifting less often. And then, hey, there'll come a time where you can lift more often and that'll be just as good too. And right. You can like tweak other things. And guess what? You won't pay the price of having felt like crap while you were lifting less. And you won't pay the price of your life not being put together because you need to sort other things out. And then you'll see yourself out of the game. You would have seen yourself out of the game that way, you know?
And, you know, this is not a podcast for competitive bodybuilders. You know, if you're planning on stepping on stage, you're not going to get away with this. You know, I mean, maybe you can, but if you want to step on stage, you're probably not the type of person that wants this in the first place. Like, bodybuilders generally are much more like training maximalists than training minimalists. These are the people typing on Reddit, like, how often do I need to train my neck? Like, those are bodybuilders, generally competitive bodybuilders.
Feel attacked.
Yeah. Like, so I've been doing 20 sets of calves and traps, and like, okay, that's awesome. If that's what you want to do, and if that's your hobby, and if that's your sport of choice, that's great. But you don't have to be that to build a really great physique that's healthy and strong. That's not necessary for the majority of people.
I still feel like this podcast speaks to those who are on that side where they're competitive athletes. I think taking a page from this book, or taking a clip from this podcast, I should say, will be helpful in terms of how you program long term for yourself, even in the right. most competitive, extreme spots and places in your career. This kind of mindset, approach, and thought process will help you make better decisions.
Yeah, I think it can speak to that person, especially, I mean, I am a competitive bodybuilder. I've been a competitive bodybuilder for a long time. So when life said, ha ha ha, you won't be training like that for a while, that was devastating to me. I mean, it still gets me down, but it was really devastating to me. And I look back and I'm very glad that I didn't just stop. But now I have research to back up the fact that what I did actually was enough. Like, it was enough to keep me moving forward. I wish I had known that then. So hopefully anybody else in that position, this can be helpful for you now.
Exactly. I competed last year, and I dealt with these kinds of feelings as well, where I'm like, I did this in spite of, and perhaps I could have done better out there had my life been different this past couple of years. But I don't think that that's true anymore, especially based on the conversation that we're having. You can continue to improve for the rest of your life as long as you continue on lifting and supporting your efforts by making sure that you are getting the most out of your training.
All right, let's move on to our question and answer segment. This question is for you, Giacomo. When, if ever, is it okay to skip refeed days while on a cut?
Interesting. Well, refeed days serve a purpose. They help you with diet stress. They also upregulate your systems, which help you recover and actually understand what kind of fatigue you're in, what kind of fatigue state you're in. So I think refeed days serve a purpose in many ways. I think if you're really feeling it and you want to push the deficit deeper, I think there can be a time and a place where you can skip a refeed day if you know that you'll continue to adhere no matter what after the fact. But at some point, it is still helpful to make sure to take your refeeds because you can only break yourself down so much. If you don't give your system a chance to recover as you're continuing to beat it down, you're probably not going to be satisfied with the outcome because you will have had less muscle at the end because you will have put your body through the wringer without trying to manage the stress of the deficit. So I don't know. I mean, if you're looking for an actual answer here, which you probably are, I think you could skip a refeed, maybe like every other refeed, but there's just so many factors here. I wouldn't just straight up just try to starve yourself to death, for example. You know, refeeds are important. They exist for a reason.
It's risky to skip them too, because that can backfire.
Again, if you're the type that will do it no matter what, like on paper, that might look good. Like, oh, you're getting to a deeper deficit, but what will the outcome have been? Your muscles get more and more under recovered. So you wind up losing more muscle. Your stress levels become higher and higher. So your cortisol levels can screw with your look as well. Your workouts themselves suffer. You suffer. Like, take the refeeds. Maybe skip one here and there. But don't make that a habit.
I don't skip them. I never skip them. Some people might think that means I'm mentally weak. But I know that it backfires on me if I skip a refeed. Personally, like, my stuff is set up so meticulously and in such a calculated fashion that even though I might feel fine going into a refeed, like, I could probably do less than this, chances are good that in the following days I'm going to be so hungry that I'm going to end up having to have a higher day then anyway. So I'd rather just stick to my schedule, personally.
Yeah. This question's for you, Danny. Whenever I try to cut or lower calories, I get terrible insomnia. I've tried all the sleep hacks, but nothing helps. The only thing that puts me to sleep is eating, even if I have a late dinner, so it's not like hunger is keeping me awake. I end up snacking at 3 a.m. just to get a few hours of sleep, which obviously isn't good for a cut. Not sure if others deal with this. Thanks.
So I don't know about other people, but I know for myself, I cannot sleep when I'm hungry, period. And I know you said, even if I have a late dinner, so it's not like hunger is keeping me awake. So I guess I'm just a little bit confused. I think it is actually hunger that's keeping you awake, whether you sort of realize it or not. That's likely what it is. But I also cannot sleep when I am hungry at all. So, but you need to be in a deficit in order to be successful at a cut, which means at some point you're going to be hungry. What I do personally is I know that I can operate just fine in the morning without eating. Like, I can get through probably like the first half of my day with very little food, just some coffee. So I push my first meal until more or less as late as I can stand it, which is usually around like 11 or noon, give or take. So I start eating then, which means I have dinner quite late, usually at like 8. And then I have a snack right before I go to bed at 9:30 or 10. So that when I go to bed, I have food in my stomach. I don't feel hungry and I can go to sleep. That's super, super important to me. So it all still works within my macros, within my calories, blah, blah, blah. I just shift it to way later. Now, the only time I think that you shouldn't eat late at night is if it interferes with your sleep, which is true for a lot of people. If they eat too close to bed, they don't sleep well. Or if it gives you any sort of like acid reflux. So some people just can't eat close to bed because they lie down and the acid starts to come back up their throat, et cetera, and it's very uncomfortable. And that would certainly interfere with sleep. But if that is not you and you are the opposite like me, which it sounds like you are, eat right before you go to bed. Just save those calories for right before you go to bed. No big deal. There comes a point, usually when I'm in competition prep, which this cut that I'm on right now has been going so smoothly. I'm like barely hungry at all. Everything's going swimmingly at the moment. But I'm also not like doing a bodybuilding prep. I'm just trying to drop 15 pounds. So if I was in a bodybuilding prep, I would have to drop close to 20 to 25 pounds. And that final 10 pounds or so, there is no amount of eating close to bed that's going to stop me from being hungry because you're always hungry. You are never not hungry. And my trick for that, this is super weird and niche, but I'm going to share it with you anyway. If I can't sleep, like I'm trying to go to sleep and I can't because my stomach is just talking to me the whole time, I get up, I go to the kitchen, and I have a couple of dill pickle spears and like a cup of unsweetened almond milk. And for whatever reason, the combination of those two things, like all the sodium in those pickles compared with the hydration from the almond milk, I mean, I don't drink them at the same time I eat the pickles, then I drink the milk. And it's just enough to tide me over so that I can fall asleep. But that is extreme prep situation. That's my little hack that I'm sure a lot of people think is really weird and kind of disordered. But guess what? Bodybuilding competitions are kind of disordered. So that's what they are.
Finding something that is non-food focused that's going to give you a little hit of dopamine before you go to bed. Having a little nightcap that's something small, like Danny said, that's not going to change the course of your deficit. Like for her, it's pickles.
Well, that's super deep in prep. Right now, my snack before bed is like 350 calories.
Macro
like,
topper.
It's not a snack. It's a small meal that I eat within 30 minutes before I go to sleep.
Yeah, saving something small for the end of that works. Or just even like a little treat, like a seltzer water or whatever, like just something that just is like, I'm satisfied, I'm happy.
That wouldn't cut it for me. But I, like this person, I really cannot sleep when I am hungry. I will get up and go to the kitchen and eat something because I can't sleep when I'm hungry. So those are my tips if you're like that.
Experiment. All right, everybody, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Proteins, Muscles by Brussels Radio. Please stay in touch with us on socials at Vegan Proteins, at Muscles by Brussels. Go to our website, hit the contact button, or submit a coaching application. You'll get a video response from one of us. We're here to support. We have lots of community, and we want you to be a part of it, like our Muscles by Brussels membership. Consider signing up for that, too. Once again, my name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And we'll talk to you soon.